The Fan on Demand.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
This is the Poker Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net, Chris DeCero, and myself, Rob Wong. This is the World Series of Poker Preview Edition. Chris, we're just about a month away. May 27th is when it all gets started down in Las Vegas at the Rio. Coming up later in the show, we'll be joined by Naomi Strasser, the president of Ariel Communications Group. She deals with all the Canadian public relations, so basically pretty much just tries to sell Canadians on what they can do down in Vegas. So while they're
tough sell, eh?
Tough sell, very tough sell. I mean, it's pretty much the biggest adult playground in the world. We'll also be joined by Norman Chad. He, of course, is one half of the commentary team for the World Series of Poker on ESPN, along with Lon McCarron. He'll join us later in the program. But let's begin about talking about what how you get started, I guess, as far as the World Series of Poker, Chris. I mean, there's so many ways you can enter. You know, like you were saying to me off air, lots of people think it's just the 10K main event, but there are tons.
Yeah,
tons of,
there's lots. And let's be clear, the reason that we're doing this show now, this week, is because this is the time when you need to be making your plans to go to Vegas to play in the World Series of Poker. People always, you know, they're like, oh, the World Series is on. Oh, I should have gone down. Well, now is the time. You need to book your rooms. You need to figure out what events you're going to play in, and you need to make your plans. All the poker players, everybody who goes down and spends time at the Rio during the month of June and into July is making their plans now. So this is the time to talk about it. So you can't say this year, I forgot.
And I guess we can start there. I mean, how many events are there that you can actually participate in?
Well, how big is your bankroll?
There's
a misunderstanding among people. A lot of people think that the main event of the World Series of Poker, the 10K World Championship, no limit hold'em, is the only event of the World Series of Poker, because that tends to be what you see on TV, is just that one event broken up and broadcast in a whole bunch of segments. But really, there's over 50 events in the World Series of Poker, and the bankroll sizes range from $1,000 buy-ins up to some pretty severe 50,000, or as you mentioned, the one drop, the $1 million buy-in tournament. So you can find something to fit your bankroll. You do not have to be a flush rich poker pro or a rich businessman in order to play in the World Series of Poker. You can be anybody. And that's the beauty of it. That's where Chris Moneymaker came from. He was anybody who didn't even have the 10K to play. He satellited his way in, which is another great aspect of this event, is that you don't, I mean, if you have the 10,000, you can pony it up and walk up to the cage and pay. My favorite moment, I've mentioned this before, of the main event of the World Series of Poker every year, is when you walk up to the cage, you hand them $10,000 in cash.
Yeah.
And they hand you a voucher for $10 off on your food.
That's a pretty decent trade-off, I guess.
Yeah, it seems to be about right for me. So, you know, but you don't have to pay the 10 grand. You can satellite your way in. You can get in for free. You know, our sponsor, Party Poker, you can play on partypoker.net. There are all sorts of satellites to get you a seat in the World Series of Poker, into the main event, into side events, into smaller events. There's lots of ways to do it. You know, you can play step tournaments where, you know, you pay a very small amount to buy into play at one level, and then you keep going up. If you win, you go to the next level. You win, you go to the next level. So you sort of satellite your way in to that tournament, and you can do it for free even, or for very little money, you know, and you can do it live at the Rio as well. You can go down there and you can play. There's satellites running nonstop at the Rio during the World Series of Poker for people to try and win their buy-ins into various events, including the main event.
All right, well, we've got a couple of steps down. You figure out what you want to play. You figure out how you're going to get into it. Now, what's next? Accommodations? I mean, trying to figure out how to get down there? I mean, is that the next step?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots to going down to Vegas to play in the World Series. You know, what poker players do, what I do every year is I sit down as soon as the schedule comes out, which is usually January or February, and I start looking at the schedule and trying to figure out targeting times when I'm going to go down. Now, for me, I tend to try and go down a couple times. I tend to go for a couple weeks or a week in the middle of June, play several events, and then come back for the main event, which is in the beginning, the first week of July. It breaks it up a little bit for me. It's a grind, you know. It really is a grind to be down there and to be playing nonstop. I mean, Vegas is a grind for anybody, but as when you start playing World Series of Poker events and you're playing 10, 12 hours a day, it's tough sledding. So you need to kind of really plan it out very carefully as to what you're going to do, what your bankroll is, how much you're going to spend, you know, what you're going to do if you win, what you're going to do if you lose.
And, you know, I guess that's one of the things we can talk to Naomi about later. I mean, what you can do during the week that you're there. But you mentioned the grind that, you know, that it puts on your body, you know, physically and mentally during the week that you're there. I mean, you know, what can you do really to relax and have a break? I mean, you're pretty much focused on trying to win these tournaments. I mean, is it that easy just to walk away and, you know, not think about it, have dinner? Or are you constantly walking around thinking about that hand that you just played or what you're going to do next, what you need to do? Like,
all you have to do is walk down the hallway of the Rio during the World Series of Poker and you'll find out just how hard it is to get away from thinking about poker, because every conversation, every step of the way is guys talking about hands and the way that things happen. And, you know, you hear a lot of bad beat stories, but that's all anyone talks about is poker. But you have to really plan it out. For me, when I go to play, you know, I do things very, very carefully. If I'm playing at noon, a noon start, like for the main event, it's a noon start. I'll go in the morning. I'll get up. I'll get a healthy breakfast. I tend not to drink coffee and eat junk food during, you know, poker tournaments because it burns you out faster. I'll have a healthy breakfast. I'll go for a swim in the hotel pool, you know, rest up a little bit and then head down to the Rio. I drink only water until late in the day. I won't touch coffee during the tournaments because, as I said, you play 10, 12 hours a day. You know, you start drinking coffee and eating candy, drinking Red Bull. Boy, oh boy, you know, you're putting yourself in a precarious position for later on in the day. So you really have to be careful of what you're doing. You have to eat healthy. You have to think healthy. You know, if you're going to Vegas to party and have a good time and maybe play in one event and take a shot, then I understand, you know, living the nightlife. But you talk to the poker pros and they have to be very careful about that. You can't be out partying every night and expect to do well playing in poker tournaments. You're playing against some of the best players in the world who will jump on every little mistake that you make. So it's crucial that you're in the best physical, mental shape as you can be when you start playing those events.
Is there any other general advice you can give to people that maybe it's their first time going down to participate at the WSOP? I mean, you mentioned all the things that you do, the coffee stuff, having a good breakfast. I mean, clearly some things work for others and some things don't work for other people. Anything just very general that you can tell people to make their experience a lot better?
Well, I mean, everybody's different. I mean, look at Phil Ivey. Phil Ivey, you know, plays quite often, having played cash games all night the night before. In fact, famously, a couple years ago, Phil Ivey mistakenly folded the best hand, folded a flush that he didn't know he had.
Wow.
And the backstory to that was he had played all day, and this is very deep into the main event. I mean, I believe they were down to 30 or 40 players, very deep in the main event. He had been at the Bellagio playing cash games all night. So he played in the day before, all day in the World Series, went to the Bellagio, played cash games all night, came back to the Rio to play the next day of his World Series event, and made a horrible mistake, probably because he was exhausted. So, you know, sleeping well and eating well is really, really important to it. But, you know, if you're a first-timer there, the biggest piece of advice I give everybody is suck it in, enjoy it, because the feeling when you walk into the room, when you walk into the Rio, you know, and just the sound of chips and looking at the sea of poker tables, hundreds and hundreds of poker tables, is very overwhelming for people the first time. You know, but it's a really neat feeling when you walk up to the rail and instead of having to stop on the rail as a spectator, you show them your little seat card and off you go and you're playing in the World Series of Poker, the greatest poker tournament in the world.
And what was that like for you? I mean, I can't believe I'm about to ask you this. When was your first time and how was the experience?
The first of, yes.
Yeah,
that's very funny, Rob. I think the first World Series that I played in was 2005 or 2004. And it was a side event. It was a $1,500 buy-in event. It wasn't a big event because I didn't have the bankroll then to play in, and I didn't have any sponsorship behind me. But I saved some money. I had a decent poker bankroll of my own that I was willing to put some up. And I stepped into that event and I was scared to death because I just assumed that everybody at the table was a professional poker player and really good at the game.
Yeah.
That's not the case. The truth is the main event, especially of the World Series of Poker, is the greatest collection of bad poker players in the world because everybody wants to play in it. Guys satellite their way in. Guys, you know, do all kinds of crazy things. Their friends put up the money for them and they go and play. You get all kinds of players. And a lot of them are playing like I did that very first time, scared, tight, you know, afraid to make a mistake. And what happens is after you start to play in multiple events and you become comfortable at the poker tables there, what you start to do is look for those guys at the table. You're looking for that guy that you figure it's the first time. I ask those questions all the time at the table.
Yeah, it's your first time.
First time here, yeah. First event, yay, good for you. Congratulations. Now I know he doesn't want to get busted an hour into the tournament. So you can make people make difficult decisions based on the fact that they're a little bit scared and they really don't want to have to go home and tell all their friends that they got knocked out 40 minutes into their first World Series of Poker event.
Yeah, I mean, it's like just hearing you talk about it, I mean, it just sounds intimidating. I mean, you walk into a tournament at Falls View or something, I mean, there's 100 people maybe playing. That's intimidating. But to go to the World Series of Poker, I mean, this is the grandest stage of them all. It's going to frighten you to death.
Yeah, and look, if you manage to last more than, you know, a day or so, especially in the main event, what's going to happen is there's going to be an empty seat at your table, or your table's going to get broken and you're going to get sent to another table, and you're going to sit down and you're going to look across the table and you're going to say, oh my God, that's Phil Hellmuth.
Yeah.
Or, oh my God, that's Johnny Chan. Or, oh my God, that's Scotty Wynn. Or, oh my God, that's Tom Dwan. Or, oh my God, that's... Because so many of these players are recognizable now that your chances of sitting at a table with a known pro that you recognize actually become very good if you spend more than one day playing in an event. And you're going to have to sit down and play with pros. And again, that's another step of intimidation that you need to get past. Not be afraid of them. Realize that they don't know you at all. They have no idea how you play. And the one thing that they're probably counting on is you playing timid and scared. So if you don't play that way, you can actually do all right against the pros.
Do you find a lot of the amateurs or just, you know, the first timers like to go after the pros? They want to take them on? Immediately?
Yeah, there's two trains of thought there. You get the guys who are avoiding those guys at all costs, and then you get the guys who are just looking for that story, that they're willing to stick all their chips in. I mean, face it, we've all seen rounders.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody wants to bluff Johnny Chan. I've sat at the table with Johnny Chan, and I've had the thought go through my head, I should bluff him just so that I can say that I did.
Yeah.
But that's death. You think Johnny Chan doesn't know that people try and bluff him so that they can say that they bluff Johnny Chan? I bet you he's pulled a lot of chips across the table in his lifetime, watching people try and replicate rounders. So, you know, you just have to be, you have an advantage over poker pros if you're a student of the game of poker, in that you've seen them on TV, you've watched them play, you have an idea of what their style of play is. If you sit down with Daniel Negreanu, you know that he plays small ball poker, that he rarely raises pre-flop, that he's looking to outplay you after the flop.
Yeah.
So what you do is you make him make difficult decisions before the flop. You don't let him get into his comfort zone, but that's hard to do. You know, if you're sitting there at the table and Daniel Negreanu is in a hand, you know, do you have the guts to raise him off the hand? Even thinking that you might not have the best hand, but you might be able to raise him off the hand, because you don't want to play into his strengths. You know, you don't want to play into Phil Hellmuth's trapping instincts. You don't want to play into Tom Dwan's ability to float, you know, flops and take it away from you at the first sniff of weakness. So your advantage is to play hard against these guys right off the bat. Play early hard against them, you know, pre-flop, where their advantage is significantly less. And, you know, you could do okay because you know how they play.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're on TV all the time, so you get to see, you know, their strengths and weaknesses. And you mentioned, you know, all the things about Daniel, the small ball poker and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, people just go on message boards or they just read articles. They know these guys almost as much as they know themselves, it seems.
Absolutely. And listen, I've done that. I've played, you know, playing in the main event. If I've spent a few hours at a table and a player that I don't know is particularly good, I'll find out what his name is, and in a break, I'll go look him up online. I'll try and
Google him. Yeah.
I'll Google him and see if he's somebody that I should be aware of and that I should be afraid of, or if there's any tendencies that I can find. If there's someone who's played enough, you know, you can find information on them. If they've won events, especially, you can find out the way they play hands, and that's a huge advantage that they generally don't have over you as an amateur player playing in the event.
Well, we've talked about the World Series of Poker itself. When you're not at the table, we'll talk next about what you can do away from the table, out on the strip, out in Vegas.
There's
maybe a few things, isn't there? There's just a couple of things. Naomi Strasser, the president of Ariel Communications Group, will join us next here on The Poker Show. We'll chat about all the adventures that you can get into down in Sin City. That's next here on The Poker Show, brought to you by PartyPoker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers and earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package. Play for free at PartyPoker.net to see if you've got what it takes to get to Vegas. Qualify now at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Welcome back to The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. And we talked in the last segment about the World Series of Poker itself, but now let's chat a little bit about what you can do away from the casino. As like you said, Chris, there's plenty of things to do in Sin City, just a few.
And it's important if you're going to play in the World Series of Poker or any big poker tournament that you do get away from the tables, get away from the casinos, and spend some time relaxing. And there is no bigger expert than our guest.
And that would be Naomi Strasser, the president of Ariel Communications Group. She handles Canadian public relations for the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. Thanks for joining us, Naomi.
It's my pleasure. How are you guys?
Doing very well, thank you.
Well, not us having as much fun as you, because I understand you are in Las Vegas as we speak.
I am, and it's a beautiful 96 degrees Fahrenheit today, and a lot of people here in Las Vegas over the weekend, and looking forward to inviting all of our Canadian friends down for the World Series of Poker and anytime they'd like.
Well, in the first part of the show, what we talked about was, you know, how you can get down there and, you know, win packages and win seats and stuff like that. But when you get there, you know, you have to travel, you have to find accommodations. And for a lot of people, it's very overwhelming. And they always ask their friends, well, where should I stay in Vegas? Where should I stay? Should I stay on the Strip? Should I stay in Red Rocks? Should I stay, you know, down on Fremont Avenue? You know, you represent the city of Las Vegas and you know better than anybody. What advice would you give someone looking to go to Vegas who really wasn't that familiar with the territory?
Well, I would say, first of all, that that's the beauty of Las Vegas, and that the destination itself really does have something for everyone. So if you're looking for a really high-octane experience and a casino resort on the Strip, there are phenomenal options for you. You know, Bellagio just finished a $75 million renovation of all of their rooms. MGM just did another $160 million renovation of their rooms and suites. There's a brand new tower at Caesars Palace. The Octavius Tower is phenomenal. The Augustus Tower is there as well. All kinds of wonderful places to be. And of course, you know, the Tropicana, which is actually a little bit further down the Strip, has also undergone a real renovation with some wonderful rooms, and you can get some great rates everywhere. So it's really just a matter of finding what you'd like. If you're looking for something that's a little bit quieter and not a non-gaming property, the Trump is a terrific place to stay. Vidara over at City Center is also a nice, quiet, relaxing resort with beautiful suites as well. PH Towers has recently opened. Palms Place is a great place to be and really close to all of the action. So there's really no shortage of places. It's just a matter of finding what you'd like. And for those people who would really like to be off Strip as well, there are wonderful resorts. If you feel like venturing, you know, about 20 minutes away, you can head up to Red Rock. You get spectacular views of, you know, the beautiful Red Rock Mountains and all of the gorgeous scenery out there. M Resort is a fantastic property also off Strip. And, of course, there's great properties downtown, the Golden Nugget and other classic properties that a lot of people really do enjoy. So there really is something for everybody.
Naomi sent me once out to Red Rocks, and I had no idea how beautiful it was out there and how great the properties were. I got to tell you, that's, you know, friends say that, well, I'm going to Vegas, but I don't really want to stay on the Strip. I say, go to Red Rocks because of that experience. It's really something out there. And there's lots of hidden gems like that.
You know, one of the things that I really like about Red Rock is that you can actually get a lot of adventure, and particularly for a poker player who's sitting at a table for a number of hours, I think that it's always good to be in the great outdoors, and you're out in the desert, you're out in this beautiful scenery. You know, you can do anything out in that area. You can head up to Mount Charleston, you can, you know, go out to Red Rock itself and go hiking, you can go biking, you can go horseback riding. If you wanted to take a day trip, You can head out to the Grand Canyon. It's really just a stone's throw away, and you can get there by helicopter. There are a lot of off-road tours. You know, people will take you down in a Hummer or in, you know, off-road vehicles. There are bus trips. Hoover Dam is terrific. You can spend a day. Black Cat Rafts has a great tour that takes you right down the river, and you can really see that engineering marvel. And it's a really nice way to get away from, you know, the hustle and bustle of the poker tables and everything that's happening on the Strip, and yet you can still come right back and enjoy all of that later in the evening. So it's really a great place to be, and its proximity is so terrific. I know a lot of people really do enjoy those types of adventures.
You know, in I think it was 08 I had a, or 09, I had a good run in the main event of the World Series of Poker, and my sponsor at the time sent me on a helicopter trip into the Grand Canyon. And since that day, you know, people ask me, I get asked all the time, as I'm sure you do, Naomi, what, you know, what do you do when you're in Vegas? What should I go do? And that's the number one thing I say, no matter how much it costs, spend the money to take the helicopter trip into the Grand Canyon, because it is absolutely spectacular. It is unbelievable, that experience of doing that, landing in the canyon, getting out, having a little lunch and some champagne. And I came back and had one of the best days I've ever had at the poker table after that. So, you know, if that's something that you can do, if that's within your budget to do it, then go and do it. That's an amazing trip.
Yeah, it really is something very, very special. You know, the Grand Canyon is so close to Las Vegas, and it is such a marvel. And to be there, and especially to go down by helicopter, so you go, you land right in the base of the canyon, you look around, and it's just spectacular. And you really sort of expand your lungs and get a chance to breathe. And it's really neat to just see all of the geography that takes you out there. It changes, and really a very beautiful trip if you can do it. There are a lot of places like that that are really very, very close to Vegas, and I think people really do enjoy going out to. Valley of Fire is another one that a lot of people really do love, and the colors are spectacular. It's very, very popular for hikers. Again, a very nice place to sort of clear your head and just breathe some terrific air and really regenerate and get yourself ready for your next round.
Yeah, I was just there last month, and the Valley of Fire is absolutely spectacular. Naomi Strasser, president of Aerial Communications Group, joining us here on the Poker Show, Rob Wong and Chris DeSero. Let's just get back to the accommodations for a second, Naomi. I'm just curious, you know, we know deals pop up for hotels, you know, all the time here or there, and with the World Series of Poker starting up at the end of May, I mean, when should people start booking their accommodations? Is it better to do it closer to the date, you know, a year in advance? I mean, when's really the best time to start figuring out where you want to stay and trying to get the best deal?
Well, I think it's always a great idea to start investigating things as early as possible. You know, there are always wonderful packages that are available through through the airlines like WestJet and Air Canada. Sunwing has great nonstops that go from Toronto as well, and, you know, WestJet from various points across Canada. And the same for Air Canada. There are a number of flights a day that land, and we're lucky enough to be opening a new terminal at McCarran in a couple of months, and looking forward to bringing more Canadian visitors down. But I would suggest actually going to visitlasvegas.ca. It's a really terrific and comprehensive site that will allow you to see all of the great things that are happening in Las Vegas. It'll give you links to the various hotels. It can help you plan your trip, and it's really a phenomenal resource. So I would check out visitlasvegas.ca, and as well, you know, start looking around. There are a lot of wonderful travel partners who always have terrific deals going on, Expedia, iTravel 2000, etc., and really do your research and come visit us.
Now, the other big question that people ask all the time about Las Vegas, and again, if you're down there playing in a poker tournament and you're going to take a night off, people want to go see shows. That's always the other big thing. And I've been lucky. I've seen all of the Cirque shows that are down there. And, you know, one of my personal favorites is Penn & Teller over at the Rio. Is an amazing show. But people ask all the time about the shows. What should they go see? What should they do? Which ones are the best? And the answer almost is you can't go wrong.
Well, that's really true. You really can't go wrong. So if you're the kind of person who really enjoys a Broadway musical, you can go see Phantom. You can go see Jersey Boys. If you like something that's a little bit more risque, you can see Peep Show. Absinthe is a fabulous show that opened at Caesars, and it's just outside between the main area, so the main check-in area at Caesars and Serendipity 3, the terrific restaurant. And it's really a lot of fun, a real hoot under a big top. And I happen to think that that one is really terrific. If you like Cirque shows, you know, there are 7 to choose from on the Strip, and they're all very, very different. Ka is an engineering marvel. Love will have you walking out, you know, humming every Beatles tune. Elvis is one of my favorites and really does tell the story of Elvis's rise to fame. And really
soon to be replaced by Michael Jackson, though.
Michael Jackson will actually be opening next year at later at Mandalay Bay.
There you go.
Leaving for
great show.
A little bit different, which is a great show, but Zarkana will be opening to replace Viva Elvis at Aria. And Jabberwockies now have a permanent installation at Luxor. You can always go see the classic Showgirls, Jubilee, which is really, again, you know, you want a taste of classic Vegas, that's a wonderful one for you. Brad Garrett just opened. Shania is opening later this year. You know, Celine is, of course, you know, an extraordinary show. It's really a fabulous environment and a really beautiful set, and she's so terrific and so talented. You know, there's no shortage of things to see. La Rev at Wynn is terrific, and if you happen to be here when Garth Brooks is playing, that's certainly not one to miss. He is just the consummate entertainer, and I have to say, I had the pleasure of seeing him perform a couple months ago, and really, really, really enjoyed it. So,
if you're playing the main event of the World Series of Poker, you can end up with Brad Garrett at your table during the day and go play against him at night.
You could.
Yeah, all the celebrities definitely coming out for the World Series of Poker. Naomi, we've talked about accommodations, we've talked about shows. Let's get to the good stuff. What can we eat in Las Vegas? I mean, clearly everybody wants to know. That should be the question.
In Las Vegas? Well, you know, again, there really is something for everyone. So depending on what your tastes are, there are phenomenal buffets that really will give you a nice tour around the world. You know, you can head over to Cosmopolitan, which has the Wicked Spoon Buffet, and it's just outstanding, as well as a whole variety of restaurants. They have an excellent restaurant program ranging from Jose Andreas's Jaleo to Chef Scott Conant's Scarpetta and DOCG. They've got Milosh, so if you've ever eaten in Montreal, there's a Milosh there as well, and STK, all kinds of great restaurants. Wynn has phenomenal restaurants. Society Cafe at Encore is always an excellent choice, and one of the other things to note at the Wynn and Encore properties is that all of the restaurants have vegetarian and vegan menus, so there are a lot of choices there. Really excellent places to be. I know that poker players tend to love steak and sushi, from what I understand.
Yes.
So, you know, the greatest steakhouses in the world, you're going to find them here in Las Vegas at any of the properties. Prime at Bellagio, SW, Botero. You know, you've got great, great restaurants anywhere that you really want to be, and anything that you want to find.
Well, you know, I used to stay at the Wynn. I had a deal with them down there, and they took very good care of us. And my old co-host, Rob Pizzo, said that the best sex he ever had in his life was the steak he ate at the SW Steakhouse. And that's gospel truth. So there is something for everybody, and I mean, we could go on and on and on about this, but the bottom line is go to the website, visit lasvegas.ca, and that will help you decide what to do. But plan your trip now, get down there during the World Series of Poker, be dead money at the table so we can all get a piece of your action, have some fun and enjoy it. And thanks for your advice. I even learned stuff.
Pleasure. Bring your golf clubs. You know what? You get out early enough in June, and you can have some fabulous rounds of golf, too. There's great courses down here, and I know that that's a nice outlet for people who've been sitting a long time.
Absolutely fantastic. I appreciate you joining us, Naomi.
My pleasure. Good luck to both of you in the World Series.
Thank you.
Thank you. There is Naomi Strasser, the president of Aerial Communications Group. And like you said, Chris, I mean, you can go on and on. It's just an endless amount of things.
She knows Las Vegas,
that you can
do. Doesn't she?
I think she does. She's been there once or twice. This may be the second time that I think she's been there.
I've been there about 30 times, and I defer greatly to her knowledge of the city of Las Vegas. But, I mean, that's the truth. And there's so many hidden gems. There's little fun things that you can do that nobody knows about or very few people know about. You know, go to the neon graveyard and look at all the old signs from Vegas. You know, there's just a million things, and I've never lacked for something to do other than drink and party You know, because that's not really my speed when I'm down there, because I consider myself to be working when I'm at the World Series. And so I don't drink and party, and I've never lacked for something to do in Vegas.
Well, like Naomi said, you can check out the website, visitlasvegas.ca, for all of your Canadian Vegas needs. Coming up on the final segment of the Poker Show, we'll be joined by Norman Chad, one half of the commentary team for the World Series of Poker on ESPN. That's next on the Poker Show, brought to you by partypoker.net, here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to the party in Las Vegas. PartyPoker.net invites you to play for a spot in the biggest tournament on the planet, the World Series of Poker. Play in one of the daily qualifiers to earn your way to the WSOP with a $14,000 prize package and a chance to win your share of over $192 million in prize money. Qualify now and play for free at PartyPoker.net. Terms and conditions apply. Players must be aged 18 or over.
Well, if he re-raises now after this act, I think Raymer will know he's well behind.
I'd have to.
Wow, the king's going to the muck.
I'm sorry, he folded?
He folded.
What, he only plays pocket quads?
Welcome back to the Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, brought to you by PartyPoker.net, Rob Wong and Chris DeSera. Well, Chris, we talked about how to get to the World Series of Poker, what we can do in Las Vegas. Let's talk about the actual events themselves, and no better person to join us than Norman Chad, one half of the commentary team for the World Series of Poker on ESPN with Lon McCarron. And thanks for doing this, Norman. And how are you getting ready for the WSOP about a month away?
Oh, I just made a New Year's resolution never to go all in this year, because I quit No Limit, so it's an easy resolution to keep. No all in.
No all in. Well, listen, you know what? Not many people know this about you, Norm, but you're actually a pretty damn fine stud player, and, you know, people would say that you're a tremendous stud in general, but you've done actually quite well playing stud in the WSOP.
I've cashed a couple times. I do prefer stud in Omaha, but I think I'm more bad at hold'em than I am good at stud.
Well, that would describe probably 90% of the field of the main event, wouldn't it?
It would, but most people aren't that honest about their play. So, you know, everyone walks around like they're the next Stewie Younger. I realize I should probably be working at 7-Eleven.
Now, this is the 10th year you're going to be doing the commentary for ESPN, Norman. I mean, let's talk about your evolution. I mean, as myself, a broadcaster, I mean, I've been doing this radio gig for 5 years now, and I know I've grown 10 years now. You got into this thing not knowing much about poker. I mean, how much have you evolved over the last 10 years doing this?
I've evolved, Chris, but it's painfully slow. I really, as far as my No Limit hold'em skills go, and I don't play hold'em that often, as far as that goes, seriously, you'd think I'd be a much better player now after watching all the play that I have over the last 10 years and talking to some of the best players in the world. But if No Limit hold'em was elementary school, I would have been held back in third grade like 3 years. I'm just a slow learner, but otherwise I've gotten a little wiser and a little better about poker in general, being around the World Series for the last 10 years.
Now, you have a unique position as an observer of the game, doing what you do and doing it so well. There's a lot of comments over the years about, you know, there was that Javad Khan stretch of the game where, you know, people were being loud and brash and obnoxious at the tables, and I know that you've spoken out against that, as many of us did. How do you see the sort of cycling of poker players? Because a lot of people now say that the poker players are all internet-trained and they're drab and they have no personality.
Yeah, you know, there's a happy medium that we haven't reached. You don't want to have no personality. You don't want to be what Javad, and Javad even knows it now, you don't want to do what Javad Khan was doing. You want to do a version of what guys like Daniel Negreanu have done for years, which is be pleasant at the table, be personable at the table, and especially when it's trying to be on television, realize that it's on television. And actually, Mike Sexton just spoke about this or wrote about this in his blog about a week ago, that he was kind of disappointed on the World Poker Tour that these final tables, that these kids are showing up in, you know, T-shirts and flip-flops, and it's time to start representing the game better. And he's got a point. You should act like a professional, look like a professional. It reflects poorly on the game if you don't act well. So I think they need to pick it up a little personality-wise and just act well. You know, I always say win with grace, lose with grace, and have fun around the table. And particularly when it's on TV, remember that there's an audience out there, and you got to reflect well on yourself and on the game.
And I read that blog. It's at Mike's column on Party Poker, and it was a tremendous. He raised some tremendous points. He said people, you know, they complain and say, well, you know, nobody adds any money into the prize pools, but the prize pools are what they are because of the success of the game on television. And if you're not helping to build that success on TV and draw viewers in, then really you're hurting the game.
No, you are. And I think, you know, sometimes if you're a casual person and you look out at that table and everyone's dressed in black, everyone's got a baseball cap on, everybody's under a hoodie, everyone wearing sunglasses, you're limiting the growth of the game. You really got to be cognizant that you just can't do that. And so, I've complained about it on air before about, you know, sometimes I think, you know, we're at a funeral, everyone's dressed in black. Dress like Devil Fish Elliott, dress like Marcel Luce, dress like Tony Dunst. Just don't come always with that T-shirt, the hoodie, the triple shades, and it just doesn't reflect PR-wise on the game well. And plus, people want to see the people's faces, you know, so they're tired of people are hiding behind the sunglasses. If you want to do it, you can do it, but I would advise people to get out from under the shades.
Norman Chad, poker commentator, joining us here on The Poker Show, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. And Norman, let's just talk a little bit more about personalities. I mean, you mentioned the TV factor. And with the personalities that we see in poker, whether it's Phil Hellmuth or guys like Tony G, you know, when you see, I guess, maybe some amateurs that show up to the WSOP every year, how much of, you know, is it the camera factor? You know, they want to be big and brash. That's not really them, but they know the cameras are around, so they try to make this big, you know, big extravaganza out of them playing at the biggest tournament on earth.
Yeah, the undeniably the camera changes everything. If you put a camera on anybody anywhere and they're aware of it, if you put a camera in a Geico office, that insurance office is going to seem more like a discotheque. People change their behavior when they know the camera is on them anywhere. It's actually one of the reasons that there's arguments against putting cameras in courts, because if, you know, the justice system is pretty important, and when you put the camera in there with good intent, it actually can change the way people act and the even the way they argue cases because of the camera. So yes, everyone's aware of the camera, and unfortunately, people do play up to the camera. Unfortunately, you know, for some of the, you know, it also changes the play. There's nothing you can do about that. But, you know, when you're an amateur on a TV table and you're playing against Phil Hellmuth or Mike Mattisso, you know, you want to bluff them. You want to put them to the test, particularly because you're on television. That makes it more difficult for the pros, but that just comes with the territory.
Now, twittering in court is okay, just to be clear.
No, twittering in court is not okay. However, I did not twitter in court. So I was actually, this is another problem, Chris, with information these days. The internet will often actually the Los Angeles Times reported on my tweeting charges as a juror, but everything was wrong. You know, I never twittered from inside the court. I never twittered about the trial. And in fact, when I had charges against me because for juror misconduct and about tweeting in court, the charges were dismissed because none of them were true. So yes, I got into a little hot water when I was a juror because I was doing humor tweets. Not from the court, just when I went home and just making up stuff about stuff that had nothing to do with our case. The judge didn't like it. The judge brought me in, contempt of court charges, juror misconduct charges. We had a hearing, and the charges were dismissed.
Now, truthfully, if you have to follow someone on Twitter, you should follow Norm, because he is very, very funny, and I did follow the whole twittering thing in court, and I was just poking fun at it, that they did get the stories wrong.
You know, I won't do it again, except I wasn't trying to, you know, if I thought I was doing anything that was hurting the justice system, if I thought I was doing anything that was affecting the case, and I wasn't, I wouldn't have tweeted in the first place. In fact, if she just told me to stop tweeting, I would have stopped tweeting. Instead, she called me in. She told me I was excused from the jury. She told me you're going to have a hearing, this, that, another, get some counsel. And they put me through the ringer. But like I said, I didn't do anything wrong. I wasn't twittering from the juror box, and I wasn't tweeting about the case. But when I read internet reports afterwards, it seemed like I was doing both.
Well, apparently you can either follow Norm at Norm and Chad, or you can watch him on court TV.
hopefully. There is no more. I think court TV was bought by ESPN. You know.
That's fantastic.
So it's all one channel now.
Well, there's so many athletes on there anyway that they may as well just make the two come together.
Speaking of ESPN, let's talk about the coverage, Norman. I mean, I was reading an article, I don't know how old it is, but I guess it's a couple of years old maybe, on ESPN.com, and basically you're spending, I guess, more than half the year in New York voicing the World Series of Poker coverage. Is that correct?
Actually, it would have been more about between 3 and 4 months a year, and that changed last year just because of the production company. ESPN switched production companies. That one was New York-based that we've always used, 441 Productions. So, yeah, after the World Series would be over, it would take us 3 or 4 months afterwards to then post-produce and broadcast the 30 or 32 programs. They switched to a different production company this last year, Poker Productions. the poker production team that has always done high-stakes poker and poker after dark, and they're based in Los Angeles, which is where I live. So now it's 3 or 4 months after the fact in Los Angeles, which always even stuns my friends. You know, from the very beginning, people used to think that we were doing it live, even when we were doing it taped at the time. But yeah, it's several months afterwards that we the production process usually lasts to get out the 20, 30, 35-plus programs we do.
And how much preparation do you have to do going into this? I'm gonna guess that maybe last year going into that you'd never heard of P.S. Hines until you stepped into the booth to tape your broadcast. But I mean, like, how do you get the information on these people? Is it just given to you and then you just read off the script? How does that work?
Well, there is no script. We have research. So, you know, the production company will provide some research on the guys. I'm also there. Lon's also there. We'll talk to them while we're there. But it is difficult. Like, in the course of a main event, we're not going to know literally 99% of the people playing in the main event. And at the final table, usually, you know, it's going to be virtually people that we never knew 60 days prior. And it makes it a unique animal. But it makes it interesting because that's why you have so many different people and different stories. And so much interest in it because people can come from all aspects of life and walk in there and make the final table. But it is, you know, I'm more, any given day, I'm more qualified to talk about, you know, anybody's players on an NBA team than I am, you know, at a main event final table because I'm familiar, you know, I'm familiar with Kevin Durant. I'm familiar with James Harden, but I'm not familiar with P.S. Hines before the World Series begins. So it makes it a little different, but that's what makes it enjoyable. And then they usually are pretty interesting people to follow.
These guys are selling themselves a little bit short because they do spend a lot of time cruising around among the tables and watching what's going on. Because I remember, I think it was 09, I was playing the main event, and Lon was on crutches. And you could hear him coming from, like, miles away. Okay. As Lon, he watched everything going on.
Well, you're being nice. Let me just correct you on a couple things. I'm not selling ourselves short. For years, my biggest thing was picking out what T-shirt I would have on. I don't wear a T-shirt anymore. As far as Lon, all you really had to do is generally put, like, 2 vodka tonics in them and just wheel them in, and that voice starts booming. So I'm doing the T-shirts. They're getting him lubed up. The crutches, I believe, were from a Hollywood studio. He didn't even have a leg problem. He just had the crutches so people would come up to him and say, hey, what's the matter with you? Because he was starved for attention. So don't tell me that you saw Lon. You could hear Lon before you saw him. You could. But those crutches were a prop.
Well, listen, speaking of props, is there any truth to the rumor? Let's go all TMZ here. Is there any truth to the rumor of the fact that you've continued to marry and divorce just to give yourself material?
Actually, my third and current and final wife is a little worried about that fact. I think this is my last one. No, I have not married and divorced for more material. In fact, since the World Series began, I've only had one wife. I married Tony in 07 at the World Series final table at the Rio, by the way. We got married at the final table, and it was the broadcast team there was nice enough to televise it, to shoot it and give us a 30-minute wedding DVD. But no, I'm not getting divorced again for more material, even though I have run out of material. So it's something to think about.
And are you working on any more words? I mean, wamboozle.
Squadoosh.
Yeah, squadoosh. I mean, these have all become staples of the poker broadcast. We need something new from you.
Yeah, they came naturally. I think I only tried, you know, most of the words I use, I was using at the beginning, and some words I'd use before I got on the air. You know, like I used to use squadoosh when we were in college, and wamboozled, I thought, of the first year we were on the air. But I really haven't come up with anything else. I can't even remember. I came up with a new term for all in that never caught on. I can't even remember what it is. Okay,
maybe that's why. Yeah,
what it is.
Well, we'll have to get our crack research team on that.
It's amazing. I used it at least 5 or 10 times during the broadcast because I got tired of the way people were saying all in. I wanted a little more jazzy way to say all in. And whatever I used never really caught on. Like I said, it caught on so poorly, I can't remember it.
Well, the catchphrases, it's all part of the fun. It's all part of what makes you guys great at what you do. And it wouldn't just be the same. You know, there was some worry when they changed production companies that they might not, we might not hear you. But you and Lon have become synonymous with the sound of especially the main event of the World Series of Poker. So we appreciate you taking the time out of your extremely, extremely busy couch slouch schedule to do this for us, and we'll send you your check for $1.25.
Now, how busy can my schedule be if I'm on the couch every day sending out $1.25? Think about it.
Pay
I have
the
nothing
man.
Else to do today. You know, by the way, there's nothing else I could do. As far as I appreciate your kind spirits about Lon and I doing it. We're really qualified. We're not even qualified to do this. And trust me, Lon is qualified to do absolutely nothing. So there's nothing else we could do, and we'll just keep doing it as long as they have us do it.
Well, you do it better than anybody.
Definitely. Thanks, Norman.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So there you have it. You've got everything from start to finish. How to get into the World Series of Poker, how to spend your time in Las Vegas, and the fact that you need to have Norman Chad calling your name at some point if you want to be successful at this game.
Yeah, that's pretty much money, if you ever have that experience, to have Law McCarron and Norman Chad commentate about your table. That'll do it for another edition of The Poker Show. This is the WSOP Preview Edition. If you ever miss a show, you can follow us on iTunes and check out the shows there, or head over to sportsnet590.ca. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at WongSN590. He is at Chris DeCero. This has been The Poker Show, brought to you by Party Poker.net on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.